Once upon a time in Ireland, though, when you asked for a cup of coffee, you got a spoon of coffee powder and hot water, mixed them together, and hey presto, that's coffee. And if somebody mentioned to you, let's go for a coffee, you'd probably go to the supermarket to get a jar. Now it's a whole different story, because from all the stuff, Arabica, do you have the Arabica? Do you go for that, do you?
I don't even really know what Arabica is. I know what Arabica is.
None of us do. The Americano, or the Cappuccino, or the Moccato, and all these kind of things. Not to mention the Soya Latte. We're all the French press, flat white, the usual kind of stuff. So, the usual kind of stuff in terms of the last few years I'm talking about. When exactly? I'm talking here to Nora Costigan. And Nora, I'm looking at you as some kind of an expert here. I hope you are.
An expert.
When did we go coffee mad? I mean, how has it changed? Like, I was TTTTTTT in about 1999. I had a cup of coffee. Not that I hadn't had one before that. And I've been like this latte nonsense mad since then. It's just stupid, you know. So give us the start of it all, Ireland-wise.
I think there was a bit of a perfect storm of circumstances. I don't like to lump everything on the Celtic Tiger.
But you're right.
Yeah. Well, no, I think that... So, I mean, sophistication was never our default setting, and obviously in the 80s and 90s, well, 80s, we were recessioned out of our mind, and then England started to pick up a bit before us, and they got their coffee revolution in advance of us, so obviously we copycatted onto that. Then the Celtic Tiger happened, and boom, next thing you know, it's coffee, coffee, coffee. But I also then, we were watching, you know, the likes of Rachel from Friends sitting on a comfortable couch drinking coffee out of giant mugs. Next thing you know, it's latte, macchiato.
Yeah, and Central Perk. But it is strange the way we do. I mean, when we go in and ask for one, we don't ask for a big or a small or a large or a medium. That we have all these ludicrous terms that are part of the lexicon now. And like, it's a bit like... Hang back, folks.
Ease up, indeed. I mean, we all started off with granules, you know. Like, who are we kidding? Everybody started off with granules in Ireland, and then cappuccino probably would have been my gateway coffee, you know. And then, as far as I knew, there was cappuccino that was as fancy as it got. Then there's latte. I mean, what is the actual difference between a latte and a cappuccino? Do you know?
Well, I don't actually.
I actually do know. Coincidentally enough, well, not coincidentally, but it's 2/3 of a cappuccino is foam, whereas only 1/3 of a latte is foam. That's the only difference. Really? They're completely the same.
Well, I mean, my mother used to just boil a milk on the thing, on the gas, whatever, and get a little bit of thing, throw it in on top of the thing. And basically, a latte is a girly coffee. It's about 80% milk anyway.
It is. It's just milk. There's no water in it, essentially. There's no water in a latte. But you're telling me your mother used to make coffee. She was revolutionary.
I know. Yeah. You know, that's true. Well, hold on a second now. Would you go further and say this is getting in the way of who we are?
Absolutely.
Diluting the national identity.
that might be a good thing
when I think of our national identity of the 20th century. Let's move on and lose some things.
I don't want to taint us all as you know, boozos, dipsos. But you know, we've adopted coffee culture. We didn't nail our. We borrowed this idea from, you know, the from Europe, from America. You know, our social space, our default social space is the pub. And I mean, I'm not trying to push us all into the pubs and be drinking from midday onwards. But there's something very unique about the Irish pub. You know, not the sort of neon bright lights place. With cocktail lists as long as your arm and lychees and mango puree and whatnot, but the sort of, you know, the stone floor, wooden furniture places with, you know, second names over the doors, no TVs, you know, soul to the earth, you know, they really that's something that don't want to see losing it.
Yeah, but like the whole thing about this whole pub culture thing about possibly like, you know, it's being eroded a little bit now. Are you sure that's not necessarily a good thing? That might be a good thing. No? Like, I mean, what's wrong with coffee house culture? It's better than wine bar culture, which was the one in the middle.
Well, yeah, there's nothing essentially wrong with it. I do subscribe to it myself, but it's adopted. And it's kind of, it's jumping the shark. It's just completely overtaken itself, you know. There's coffee houses popping up.
Well, who do we think we are? The world has got smaller. We're European now for the last 40 years.
It's
properly
boring, though, isn't it?
No, I don't think it is. Well, I like going for a coffee on a Saturday afternoon.
I'm as guilty as the next man.
Whatever it happens to be.
I'm as guilty as the next man of a coffee. I had one this morning. I'll probably have two later on.
I've had two already this morning too. But look,
there's coffee cups all over the studio.
Okay, but let's take it. Yeah, no, sorry. Yes, that's the people were very naughty last night and didn't put them away. They're watching the match, I presume. Now listen. Look, you know, coffee snobbery then, it does go to the level of just, like, we all buy into it. I just mentioned all the words earlier and pronounced them all wrong, but we still do them all, don't we? It's out of hand.
Absolutely, it's completely out of hand. I mean, you know, you go into a coffee shop and basically if you're not reading a sort of a two-page manifesto on the coffee house's ethos, then realistically you're just going to be drinking Nescafe. It's all about, you know, blended beans and seasonal beans and beans being treated to, you know, the best of travel journeys from plant to pot. And I mean, realistically, would you be able to tell the difference between an Arabica bean from Ethiopia and some other bean from South America?
No, I can tell different tastes of coffee, but I wouldn't know which was which necessarily. I was going, like, I would know that something is different than something else.
But you wouldn't know why.
Oh, God, no. God, I wouldn't have a clue.
I can basically tell the difference between granules and house coffee, and that's it.
Oh, geez, I could do that, all right. My God. Okay, well, let's try this one then. You know, like, the first time they made coffee sexy, because we are talking about a lifestyle thing here, and we are talking about it therefore being sexy, and therefore being an accoutrement to how well you make a statement in terms of being in the public and in a queue and all the rest. Mm-hmm. Now, when did it first start, sexy-wise?
Unquestionably with Nescafe's Gold Blend ads that went from 1987 to 1993.
Oh, the man from the Avengers. No.
I don't know. Anyway, it was a couple, Tony and Sharon. There was these ads that were serialised. I remember them. And then when I did my little bit of research on them, they were marketing genius. This couple, you know, they lived in sexy London people living in an apartment block, and then she calls down to borrow a jar of Gold Blend, and it's all, you know, furtive glances over the passing of the Gold Blend for her dinner party. And then this just eventually was serialised. I think they got married. And yeah, that was a pretty sexy. I
mean, all right, but the whole thing we're talking about now, of all this kind of stuff, of the Starbucksy kind of way of living, etc., is a bit of a Celtic Tiger Irish thing. Yeah.
Oh well, definitely, it's something I think we adopted during the Celtic Tiger to make ourselves more sophisticated and in line with other booming societies.
Yeah.
You know, tea wasn't going to cut it with the big lads. Really?
Well, here's one here that says, remember when the fanciest thing you could get was coffee with whipped cream on top? I mean, like, when's your earliest, by the way, in terms of, was it these ads on TV saying, I must have that cup of coffee?
No.
Tony and who?
Tony and Sharon. Tony and Sharon. She had this ridiculous bouffant that, you know, you could live a family of four in.
Right.
My first coffee, I had to leave the country to have my first coffee. When I lived in Australia as an 11-year-old for about 6 months, and I was working in a stud farm. Well, I was assisting on the workings of a stud farm, so we were up at six. I was just handed coffee by my uncle, who I idolised, and I just drank it because that's what I...
But I'd say you loved it at 6 o'clock in the morning when you were in a stud farm. Perfect,
I thought it was disgusting. I was drinking milky burnt stuff.
Okay, I'd say you got to love it.
Well, this is the thing. The caffeine's functionality overtook its disgusting taste. But I abandoned it when I got home, and then, like, sort of in my early 20s, I started experimenting with cappuccinos. And then
with the cappuccinos, the chocolatey stuff kind of stuff on top of that, what drew you in, do you think?
Well, it did, yeah. I think it's a gateway. it's a gateway garnish, really, for non-coffee drinkers. Because let's face it, I mean, coffee by itself, it doesn't taste nice. Nobody likes the taste of coffee unless it's got... I mean, perhaps they do. No, you drink black.
I don't know about that. Have you been in Greece lately?
No, I haven't actually. But black
one
coffee,
little shot and you're gone for a week.
Well, you'll drink it functionally. Black coffee, you will drink it functionally, but it doesn't taste nice. It's like beer. You know what I mean?
I see what you mean. Yeah, just the effect. Yeah.
The functionality, absolutely. So we garnish it with, you know, milk, cream, syrup, sprinkles, the works. You know, I'm guilty as charged.
Yeah, you buy it there, and then you go over to a little table, and there's every little thing under the sun there to put into it, and they've already put four or five things into it.
Yeah, I mean, I had a coconut mocha with chocolate sprinkles the other day and whipped cream, and I had to eat it with a spoon.
Or a tall venti in a grande cup, which basically means a small, large, and a medium cup. it's ludicrous. Carry on, though. Really, is. I bought into it too. I love it.
Yeah, I know. Completely guilty.
Okay, well, let's take a look then, because, like, you know, let's take a look at the effect. I mean, like, we've been a tea-drinking country for the last, I don't know how many billions of years or whatever. Do you think people are a bit more wired these days because of the coffee obsession?
Yeah. Well, we're not able. Like you said, we're a tea-drinking country. And we're also not ones for moderation. So, I mean, I think the coffee's effect has stages, you know. So you get up, you're tired, you have one, you've got this then functional alertness. Then you move on to what I like to call the sweet spot. It's muted euphoria, and that's where you want to stay.
What time of the day is that?
About 11 o'clock, muted euphoria hits in. Yeah, yep. And then that's where you want to stay. Ideally, you'd stay at muted euphoria and then sail nicely just back into normal human being. But half a cup too much and you're gone. You're over the edge, off the cliff, and it's clammy hands, talking too much, you know, paranoia. I've ruined job interviews on the effects of overcaffeination.
I get texts every single week about this program, like less than the coffee there, Dave. You know? I remember interviewing Tom Waits once. Said, wow, are you on coffee or something? Anyway,
tea. I do think...
What's happened to tea? I mean, it'll always be part of who we are. Please say it will.
Of course. We've got TNA, you know. It's inside of us, you know. So, of course, it'll always be our go-to, I think. I mean, you don't have a cup of coffee in the evening, you know, watching the telly. You've a cup of tea.
Actually, that's kind of true. Yeah, I do go on to tea a bit later in the day, all right, yeah. Having had about six coffees.
your wine down, Gavin. Yeah,
something like that. What's your own actual coffee habit then? After 11 in the morning, would you go for more?
I can overdo it. But I mean, I've blurred the lines with coffee and dessert completely. So, you know, it's whipped cream, it's syrups, it's sprinkles, the works, you know. So but I wouldn't necessarily have one every day. I depends on what I'm doing. Like if I'm working depending on the job I'm working on, I might.
And depending on the newspaper you read, coffee's good for you, bad for you. You should take more. You should take less. It's just relentless.
Yeah, you know, it's like the red wine, the glass of red wine debate. Every single week there's a new ethos on whether.
So you're going back to the bottle of day, is that it? To have with all the experts. All right. Well, listen, Nora, I am definitely going to have another cup of coffee. Thanks a million for dropping in, Nora Costigan. Coffee times, indeed. Yes, I do want to. In fact, that's a good little break for. I want a cup of coffee.